This is A Lost Plot, the podcast where we explore meaning in movies together. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. It's another episode of A Lost Plot, and I am your host, Maverick, here with our wonderful guest, back again, fingers crossed, Andrew Reeder. Andrew, thanks for being here today.
Yeah, I'd like to make it known I'm back again for the same recording. not like for the show, for this exact movie.
Yeah, we've had a couple of beefs on this one. It's like the universe, if they didn't want us to review a movie, they really didn't want us to review this one. Why? I don't know, but here we are. So we are reviewing The Phantom Menace from Star Wars Episode 1. This was released in 1999 with a screenplay written by George Lucas and directed by him as well. It stars Liam Neeson as Qui-Gon Jinn, Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan Kenobi, Natalie Portman as Padme Amidala, and Jake Lloyd as Anakin Skywalker, Andrew's very favorite. So, Andrew, you want to tell us what Star Wars is about?
Star Wars or The Phantom Menace?
I knew as soon as I said that you were going to just... You were gonna run with that. Just The Phantom Menace, please. That'd be fine.
Let's see. You've got Jedis. You've got politics. You've got battles. You've got a stupid Gungan. You've got lots of stupid Gungans. Mm-hmm. Premise of the movie: two Jedis are sent on a diplomatic mission. Goes to heck. They escape to the planet's surface. That goes to heck. They meet a stupid Gungan. Gungan kind of saves their life. They save the queen. Who are they supposed to help with? Like, that was their diplomatic mission. They escape with her. During their escape, their ship gets damaged. They land on a planet. They need to fix the hyperdrive of their ship. They end up meeting a slave boy who happens to be the prophesied chosen one. We don't know if he has a dad or not. Maybe his mom's lying. We have, like, what, a 20-minute, 30-minute pod race?
Yeah, it's true.
If I wanted to watch that, I could have gone to see NASCAR.
I wonder how much you were going to say the same things we said last time. But anyways, keep going.
They end up freeing him from slavery because he wins, and they made a bet earlier on. They take him back. They go to Coruscant next. Yeah. They talk with the Chancellor. They end up getting, like, the current Chancellor overthrown or, like, impeached, whatever you want to call it. He's no longer in power.
Yes.
They go back to the planet. They have a uber mega battle. There's three of them. They're all going on at once, and the good guys end up winning.
There you go. So out of 9 points, Andrew, what did you give this one?
What did I give it the last two times? I have no freaking clue. We don't have those times recorded, though, right?
They're not going out. Like, I think we have half of a recording for one of them.
Good. Then you won't have my other ratings recorded. I don't know. Thinking about it right now, probably like a 6.5, 7.
Okay. Out of 9. That's pretty high.
Oh, out of 9? Yeah. 5.5, 6.
Okay. There you go. I gave it a solid 3.5. So,
oh, jeez.
I'm excited to see where we would differ here.
I'm curious, though. Are you doing it 3.5 based off of this point system or based off just, like, the top of your... okay. No wonder it's so low.
Okay, so also, you're not going to like this, but I reviewed Captain Marvel yesterday with Avalon. And
oh, dear.
I gave it a 3.75.
Captain Marvel?
Yeah. So that's slightly higher than I gave this movie. Anyways. The opener. What did you think about that opening scene? Did you think that they introduced the characters and the plot in a way that was caught your attention, really engaged you, made you want to keep watching the movie? What did you think?
Sorry, I was thinking about your ranking of Captain Marvel. We will address that later, Maverick. And considering I'm not even allowed to say certain words, we will save that for after the podcast.
Okay. The opener. What did you think of the opening scene? With Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan entering the arena, the droids and all of that stuff. Was it engaging? Did it catch your attention? Did you watch that and go, man, I really want to see what keeps happening?
Well, I already know what's going to happen. Okay. Are you asking, like, the first time I watched it?
I'm saying, yeah.
Sorry. For those of you watching, I just like screwing with Maverick, okay?
I know he does, and it's just... I don't ever know how to respond yet. I haven't found a good way to just...
I'm just that good. Anyways. I don't know. First time I watched it, I remember, like, getting the three first movies and watching them all in a row. So I think it was good enough to keep me going.
Okay.
Then again, so you... I was, like, 8 and anything would keep me going, so...
Right, right.
The opening scene is pretty good. All things considered. Yeah. Because it follows... I feel like I'm repeating myself, but I'm going to pretend I'm not. It follows the same vein of thought that all Star Wars movies do, where you start out in space. You have a ship. You're not really sure what the ship is doing. And it's kind of like over some planet. And it kind of segues into the rest of the movie.
Right. It's a very stereotypical Star Wars opener. I gave it... half points for that first bit. I thought it was decent. I thought it was interesting, just because it's the Jedi and all of that stuff. I didn't think that it was a very compelling entrance of the characters themselves. But it was fine. The lightsabers always spice things up and make it more engaging than it would be otherwise. So that was good. How do you ask this? Is the main character, do you think that they're flawed in a way that makes them a compelling character or a relatable character?
Who would you say the main character is in this movie?
See, that's what I was that's what I was curious about too. For me, after thinking about it, I think it's Qui-Gon Jinn.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Mm-hmm. It's either Qui-Gon or Obi-Wan. I think they're like the duo that the kind of It's kind of almost like a Marvel movie where you have certain Avengers movies just have so many characters. You're like, I don't know which one's the main one. Is it Iron Man or Captain America or is Thor 1-2? We don't really know. I think with Star Wars, even though they don't have like a definitive first like primary character, they at least have two or three that you can definitively say like these are the primary characters in this story. I think Qui-Gon's compelling as a character because he is sort of this father figure, and yet I don't know what you'd say his flaw is, other than he's just, in terms of the Jedi Order, he is pretty rebellious. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't remember if they cover this in the movie, but he had been offered a seat on the council and had refused it. I think there's a line about that Obi-Wan brings up.
There's a reference that you would be on the council if you did X, Y, or Z, so yeah.
Yeah. He didn't want to be on the council, which also goes back to his master, who's Count Dooku, who at that point, by the way, in the movies, hadn't turned yet. He was just no longer a part of the Order.
Interesting. That's a good tidbit. I think that Qui-Gon as a character is probably one of the most engaging characters of this movie, but it's... I guess in regards to what makes him compelling as a person, I don't know that he's a super, compelling character. I think he's somewhat compelling, and so I think you could also maybe give it half points for that, but it's also just, very clear why. I guess I kind of see what you're saying. I don't know that I fully agree. I think maybe, though, that's part of him being played out as a character who is very committed to the Jedi Order, right? And so the Jedi Order says, you know, forego, in a very stoicism type formula, you forego your life in this and that and the other thing, and you seek the good of the community around you. And so he very much holds to that, and there's going to be less of a sheen of emotion that you have with someone like Anakin or with Kylo Ren. Or with Rey Skywalker or something like that, you know. So I definitely think that you can make a good case for that. But sorry, you were going to say something.
I take back what I said about Qui-Gon being the main character. I think it's actually Obi-Wan.
Interesting.
When you think when you think about it, what makes a character the main character in a story?
Generally, they're the primary focus of it. That's usually the easiest determiner, but it's true. There can be other things that it's all. Sometimes they get creative with how they play it out. So that's not always the case. It's usually the clearest indicator. What are you thinking of specifically?
I'm thinking of there's more
other things that go into it, like their growth as an individual, the goals that they have, all of that kind of stuff. And so I guess you could say, well, you could work backwards and look at this plot and say, well, what is the goal of this plot? And then who aligns mostly with that?
I think primarily it's Obi-Wan and secondarily it's Anakin in terms of who the main, who the protagonists are of the story.
Sure. As a protagonist, Anakin definitely is a protagonist. Sure.
Yeah, because Qui-Gon, and you think of a character in a movie and like what drives the movie, what drives the story of that movie. Qui-Gon kind of does, but a lot of what drives a story is character development in movies. And Qui-Gon doesn't have any development. He is a fully developed individual. He knows what he thinks about the world. He is very methodical. He is like the wise master that Obi-Wan goes to. There's no real development with him. And while some people might like, well, Rey, you don't really have development with Rey. And that's a problem because very obvious that she is the main character of those films.
Right.
But the problem with her is that she's not developed. And yet she has no flaws. And so it's this weird combination. But with Qui-Gon, it's an understandable because he is older. He's like, I want to say he's like 40. I'd have to look up his age again. But he's not a young man. He's had plenty of years of experience. He was apprenticed to Count Dooku, so he knows what he's doing. And there's nothing in this story would develop him as a character. But Obi-Wan is someone who definitely develops throughout this story because he starts out being fairly naive. And he's kind of in this in-between where it's like he has loyalty to his master, but he also has loyalty to the Jedi Council and to the Jedi, the grouping or the organization that is the Jedi. Yeah. And as the movie progresses, he starts to see the flaws within the Jedi Order. And he, at the very end of the movie, it comes to a head when he tells Yoda, I'm training Anakin whether you like it or not. Mm-hmm. Like, his loyalty to his master is what wins out in the end. And that, and like, there's the deciding moment where he tells Yoda, I'm going to do this. And Yoda's like, well, you know what? We're actually going to let you do that. We're not going to tell you you can't, but we're not super happy about it.
Yeah, I hadn't really been thinking, because Qui-Gon gets a lot of the screen time, right?
And
it's definitely set in this grand epic narrative. And so they have all these characters, all this stuff going on, and it's easy to almost get lost in that, and that's where the fact that we're even having this discussion is a testament to how huge the universe is and how big this movie is by itself.
Yeah.
It's not ideal that we're even in the situation where we have to have a conversation on who the main character is. But I think that that's a compelling argument for Obi-Wan. That's definitely going to affect my rating in a positive way.
I think another thing that's interesting. Go ahead.
The only thing I was going to say is the main character flawed in a compelling way? I still don't think necessarily. I still think he goes through a great journey as a person, and that'll be reflected later on in the overall rating of the movie. But I don't know that Obi-Wan as a character is a very compelling.
No, and I think the thing is it goes, it's almost like Star Wars movies are unique in this way because you don't really have any other type of movie where you don't have one protagonist. It's like you have two or three. And so it's like the protagonist is split amongst them. Now, I would say Anakin's also a protagonist. Do I think Anakin's a compelling protagonist in this movie? No.
Well, sure. Sorry, go ahead.
I think, finish your thought. Yeah. I think Anakin, one of the fatal flaws with him is they're going for this person who grew up in slavery. And they're trying to sell that slavery is horrible. And Anakin says multiple times, slavery sucks. but what's so funny...
I didn't even think about that.
What's so funny to me is that there's like one big rule in storytelling. Show, don't tell.
Right. Exactly.
But the entire movie, they are telling you slavery sucks. But we never see one instance of where it actually sucks. Because Anakin is just like this happy little kid. He's like 9 years old. Ooh, I'm a slave. It sucks. I'm going to go to work now. Yeah. Ooh, I'm a slave. It sucks. I'm going to go home now and eat dinner with my mom. And we have plenty of food. So much food, we can share it with our guests too. And it's like, I think if you're trying to sell that someone's living in slavery, one, there should be no like positive emotions going on. And if there are, it should be very obvious that this positive emotion is in spite of the fact that they are a slave. Two, there should not be any semblance of a positive relationship with the slave owner. And Anakin and Watto have this weird, like, father-son relationship. Yeah, it's weird. I'm not going to make that comment. Something else that is interesting is when he goes home, they don't look like they are in a home that is like a slave habitat.
Yeah, like they're destitute or anything. He has side projects all over and other things going on.
I mean, his mom like has plenty of food to share with them. Also, what is his mom? If his mom is a slave, how does she have time to make food for everyone? And why is she at home all day? Like, I don't know. It just, they don't do very well selling the slave aspect of it. And it's like, if you're going for slavery, because that's a big part of who Anakin is. And like, it's a driving force, especially in the second and third movies, for why he does what he does. And I mean, especially in the second one, because he like has this like rampage of like, oh, I hate slavery. And I think one of the reasons two has so much scrutiny is it's almost like a shock factor for the audience. Like, hold on. What happened to the happy little boy who was so content to live as a slave and now he hates everyone for it? Like, it just doesn't add up because Hayden – here's – and I think – I don't know if it had to do with the actors, but, like, Hayden Christensen also was never there for one. So he's acting out this character who grew up in slavery. And I think he does a pretty good job if you ignore one's existence. If all you know is just
– specifically because of how – Jake Lloyd played out Anakin's character.
Yes, and if you ignore like the mentality of Anakin in one, then if you just start with two, you're like, oh, this kid grew up in slavery. I get why he's so dysfunctional and why his riz is so out of whack.
Oh my gosh. That's going to be an exciting conversation when we get to that movie. Okay.
But like my point is he does a pretty good job of portraying Anakin in that sense. The problem is when you put them up together, it's like, wait a minute. This doesn't add up. They're two like Anakin from 1 and Anakin from 2 are two so completely different people that it's like night and day. And the thing is like even in 1 and 2 and 3, the argument that's made is like Anakin didn't change while he's a part of the Jedi Order, at least between 1 and 2. All of the damage that was done before he came to the Jedi Order. Because he always talks in a positive light about Obi-Wan and like his time with the Jedi and all this other stuff. And so I think they did a really poor job setting up Anakin's character in 1 with how they did it. And so like in terms of protagonist, I think Obi-Wan's more believable. You don't know a ton about him. He has this inner conflict because he's been raised in the Jedi Order since he was basically a toddler. And he's 18 now. He spent 16 years of his life there. He spent about I don't remember how old you are when you become a Padawan, but he spent about half of that time with Qui-Gon.
Well, and if you watch Ahsoka, you're about 20 when you become a Padawan.
Okay. I will not be baited right now. but like he spent half his time with Qui-Gon and the rest of that time he was with the Jedi Order. And so there's this conflict going on and he doesn't really know how to resolve it. And by the end, he also comes into conflict, like into contact with a Sith Lord who apparently no one's heard of for like hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. And he goes through this journey almost of deciding like what kind of person is he going to become. Is he going to become a Jedi, or is he going to fall in the footsteps of his master and do things a little unorthodoxed? And so that's where we get the Obi-Wan we all know and love, who is still a rules follower, but he bends the rules just enough to be a good mix, to be a master for Anakin.
Mm-hmm. Right.
To kind of hold Anakin accountable, but also give him a little bit of a leeway in terms of what he can do.
And that's getting a little bit ahead of this movie, but definitely is important to know how they play it out in this one to make that contrast. Now, just to understand correctly, your contention almost, if I understand it, or your baseline of understanding, is that there are multiple main characters in this movie rather than just having one or two. It's more of a group of people that's the main character. Is that a good understanding of where you're coming from?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the goal, right? And that's what you see, especially with the side characters, because you have two different aspects of the movie. You have main characters and how well are they developed, how strong are they as characters, yada yada, and then you have the allies of them or the side characters and how much are they developed and all that kind of stuff. And the side characters don't have to be as developed as main characters, right? They just need to have some sort of motivation behind what they're doing, how they're acting. And so this was where it became hard for me to analyze the movie, because I saw a lot of these characters and I say, okay, if this is a side character, they're developed enough because this is clearly enough motivation for them. But if they're a main character, that's really not that much motivation. It's not really that much to develop them into. It's not very believable. That's why for me, I can't help but see Anakin as a side character, especially because he doesn't even show up for the first 30 minutes of the movie, you know?
I have a question for you.
Sure.
Is Aragorn a main character in The Lord of the Rings?
I would say definitely not in the first one. I would say the main character would be Frodo.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think I'd stick with Obi-Wan as the main character. You might... I mean, the thing is with Star Wars movies, you have a trio, right? Right. Every movie has the three protagonists. And so, in 2 and 3, it's Obi-Wan...
You mean, like, two lightsaber people and a gun guy?
Well, no, because 4, 5, and 6 has one lightsaber person.
Well, 4 has two. 5 has... one.
No, because Obi-Wan is not a main character in 4.
So, okay. Yeah, so then that becomes the question. Like, how do you separate in... Because that's close quarters, right? How do you separate that person being a primary character in that versus this?
Well, does Obi-Wan last to the end of the movie or even halfway through?
I mean, there are movies where the main character dies at the end. Just look at Braveheart. So,
well, no. I know they die at the end, but Obi-Wan doesn't die at the end. He dies, like, in the middle.
He dies, like, almost at the end. But, sure. Like it's... If your litmus test is where they die, that has some relevance, but not all the relevance. So,
I mean, I would argue 4, 5, and 6, the true main character, the story you're following, is the story of Luke Skywalker.
Yes, of course.
I
would say he's the protagonist.
Yeah, and then with 1, 2, and 3, I want to say it's Anakin, but with 1, it's like, is it? It kind of is. Because, I mean, it's like in, what is it, 2.5 hours, the movie? Anakin comes in about, like, a third of the way through.
Right.
He doesn't play, like, a major role. It's more like the setting up. And this is why I think I made this argument last time we tried to do this. But, like, I think 1 would have done much better if they had just made 1, 2. And then 3 stays the same. And 2 is sort of an in-between 2 and 3 to show Anakin's transition more. Because they're very clearly going for Anakin as the protagonist of 1, 2, and 3. But with 1, you get such a delay with getting Anakin there. And I think there's also just a lot of unnecessary stuff in there. Like, Obi-Wan and Anakin's diplomatic... Or Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon's diplomatic mission to Naboo. Just, like, we don't really need that.
Right.
All of that, like, them meeting Jar Jar. First of all, Jar Jar is useless. We could get rid of him entirely, and it wouldn't hurt the franchise. Matter of fact, it'd probably be a benefit.
Right.
Secondly, you get rid of that. What do you accomplish from the beginning of the movie all the way until they land on Tatooine? You could have started the entire movie. That this is if you keep the plot of this movie. You could have started the entire movie with the script.
Yeah.
And said that they had all of that had happened there, and that they're crash landing on Tatooine now, and that starts everything.
Right.
Because you get I'm be honest. I mean you can tell me if I'm wrong here, but I don't think you garner anything from the beginning until Tatooine. Like, we meet all these characters, but what do these characters really do for us?
Well, yeah, and so that almost makes me consider, at a broader level, let's just, because especially with how you played out how Anakin is developed in this movie, right? There's almost a sense in which he did more harm than good to the primary character of the entire franchise.
Yeah.
Just in how he played him out. The question then becomes, would the series be better if one didn't exist?
Yes, I believe so.
If you just watched episode 2 without knowing any of the background of episode 1 at all, would it be a better movie? And there's a certain sense in which you might give Anakin more leeway when he's going and rampaging, when he's on Tatooine in episode 2, than you do with this background.
Yeah, because I'm going to be honest, him rampaging without one, you're like, okay, I guess, you know, he's a slave. And, like, from what we know of slavery in modern day, we think back to, like, African-American slaves during the Civil War. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the type of treatment we will think of. The problem is, in a Star Wars universe, when we think of slavery, we think back to Anakin in episode 1. And that type of slavery is not what would cause someone to go and murder an entire tribe of individuals. Because... Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe because his mom died or something, but, like, at the same time, remember, he's having nightmares and stuff, and this has been tormenting him for over a decade now. And the only time you get any semblance of Anakin having, like, this emotional turmoil in episode 1 is when he's leaving home, and he, like, looks back at his mom and he gives her a hug.
Right.
And, like, I'm gonna be honest, that's what happens on your first day of school, not when you're leaving mom for the rest of your life and you're never going to see her again. You've been living in slavery for the past 9 years. You don't go like, oh, I'm scared. I don't want to go into the, I have never seen this teacher before. I'm going to give you a hug and then leave. All right, fam, I'm out.
Jake Lloyd's acting as a kid was very poor. I do definitely think it affected the movie a lot, especially for later in the movie when he becomes a critical piece of the movie. But, you know, whatever. Anyways, we should probably move on from that. Did you think that it was a believable setting?
Yeah, the setting's believable.
I thought so too. Usually that's an issue if there's something significant that comes up. But honestly, I didn't see anything that made me go, this makes no sense. That happens in 8 and 9. We can argue about that then. But 1, we're fine. We don't have anything to worry about. Is there something that, I guess, if the main character is Obi-Wan, is there a huge chance that they're going to lose everything that's significant to them if they don't achieve their goal?
Well, you have to ask yourself then, what is Obi-Wan's goal?
Right.
And this is where Star Wars movies become complicated, because you have, like, 3 of them. And I would say in this movie, they're more going for Padme, Obi-Wan, and Qui-Gon as their trio. Mm-hmm. And it's the one movie out of the movies where you have a trio that doesn't exist in the next one because one of them dies. Because, like, 4, 5, and 6, it's Luke, Leia, Han. That's right. The trio.
Right.
2 and 3, Obi-Wan, Anakin, Padme.
Right.
And so with Padme, you've got that. Because if she fails, she loses her entire planet.
Right.
With Qui-Gon, if he fails, the Jedi Council is just going to be like, well, that sucks. Mm-hmm. Qui-Gon's goals in the movie kind of shifts. It goes from doing his job and protecting Naboo to now trying to recruit this young boy. There's not very much risk involved for the Jedi in this movie.
Right.
Until the very end. And it's like, honestly, if you think about it, what happens if Darth Maul wins?
Nothing. Right. Well, yeah, and...
Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon die, but Darth Maul's not there to destroy everyone on that planet. The entire purpose of the Trade Federation laying siege to that planet is to get Palpatine into power. To take him from just a simple senator of Naboo, make him Supreme Chancellor. That's the only reason. Like, he of course, there's like, maybe like, oh, we're going to add to the Separatists' power by adding Naboo to that, to the Confederation, but ultimately the entire goal of that was to put Palpatine in the spotlight, and he achieved that. And so Darth Maul's there, and he's just there to keep the conflict going. To make it look like a really big bad thing is happening. Like, oh, the Federation is laying siege to this planet. This is horrible.
You mean like it adds like a extra insidious level of gravity to the situation?
Yeah, because if there's a Sith there, then the Jedi are going to back this war effort that Palpatine has coming up. And so if the Jedi back it, the Republic's most likely to back it as well. But in terms of like the actual consequences of what happens if they fail, because here's the thing. Darth Maul shows up. That's it. That's all Palpatine needs to get the motivation and to get the argument he needs. Mm-hmm. Whether or not Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan die is almost inconsequential in the the whole scale of it all.
Right. Well, especially because both Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon hold to this Jedi ideal that you are part of the Force and one with the universe and all this stuff. And so if you die, that's part of the sacrifice that's expected of you as a Jedi. And so when their lives are on the line, that's not even like a big sacrifice to them, because that's a sacrifice that's expected of them when they took their, I guess, Jedi vows or whatever they do when they become a Jedi Padawan. So, yeah. I think that's a fair argument. Did you think that the villains were compelling? I know you just touched on that a bit.
I think the villains, out of all the characters in this movie, were probably the most compelling. Even though Maul doesn't say very much, I don't think he's the real villain here. The real villain is Palpatine. Right. And you don't get a ton of, like, you basically know who he is because you've seen 4, 5, and 6 by the time you see episode 1. Uh-huh. And I'm be honest, I think George Lucas relied on that a little too much, because if you just see 1, you have no idea – oh, I can't say that – who the heck Palpatine is. You don't know who he is. He's just a senator, and you don't understand – and I mean, I guess like if you've never seen 4, it like becomes like, whoa, Palpatine was evil this whole time. And it's like an actually big reveal in episode 3, which works for a trilogy. But at the same time, your movie should be able to stand on their own. And so like, I think in terms of the villains, you have like the Trade Federation, who are made out to be the villains.
Right.
They have an interesting incentive, because it's honestly not super clear why they're doing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. That was one thing that stuck out to me, was that I didn't think it wasn't clear why they were getting involved in this war other than Palpatine told them to.
Yeah. And so I think Palpatine and Maul, in terms of like how you build up a character, because with those, with like Sith, the idea is you want them to seem intimidating and like overpowering. Mm-hmm. And so they did a good job setting up Palpatine and Maul in this movie. And then you have the whole scene when they open the doors and Maul standing there. So that was good. Even though Maul barely said anything, that added – he's almost like a Boba Fett type character where you build him up without him having to say very much at all.
Right.
But like the Trade Federation are just like
– yeah. Yeah. No, I 100% agree. I gave them half points on this one just because – the Trade Federation, I don't really understand what's going on there, why they even care, other than Sidious told them to care. But there's, and I haven't really gone through this in depth through a Movies Worth Watching episode, but I've meant to. But there's two different types of villains that you often see. One is the more empathetic route, where they go, okay, they're doing a bad thing, but they have all these great reasons why they're doing it. And that can be anything from they want to protect their, you know, estranged daughter or something, like the Sandman in Spider-Man 3.
Like Ramsey Bolton.
Yeah, or they're insane like Ramsey Bolton. Or something like that. Like, they have some sort of very understandable motivation for being this terrible person. And you don't want them to win, but you at least understand why, where they're coming from. Versus, yeah. Then you have this other group of people that you don't know a lot about. You don't know why they're trying to do this, but they're shrouded in this mystery and this terror and fear around who they are and why they're trying to do this, that in some ways your mind reads into it some sort of scary motivation or mystery.
Well, it adds to the character. Like, the mystery is the motivation factor. Right. Like, you don't need the motivation with a character that shrouded in mystery.
Right. And so you either have to lean hard one way or the other. And in this movie, especially with characters like Maul and Sidious, in this first one, I wouldn't say the same in the later ones, but in the first one, the quote-unquote villain, especially if you don't know who Palpatine is shrouded more in that mysterious fold of you don't know who they are, you don't know what they're trying to do, and you kind of give them a pass for that because they appear to be these big bad guys. And especially Darth Maul looks like the manifestation of evil, so it's pretty easy to sell them.
The Trade Federation, like, they like, make some points at the beginning of the movie.
Like, money?
Like, basically, it's just a trade blockade. They're saying you're not allowed to do trade because you're not, like, I don't know, like, you're not paying us your taxes or something. Who knows?
It wasn't clear how the universe works in regards to trade and how this blockade works.
Yeah, I think the thing is with the Star Wars universe, it's unique in the fact that people who make the movies sometimes rely a little too heavily on the fans having a high knowledge base.
Which Andrew does.
I do, so I can enjoy these movies, but then I have to sit back and realize, oh, these movies aren't that great on their own, though.
Sadness. Well, at least you're willing to acknowledge that.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say, this movie is one that I recalled watching and thoroughly enjoying as a kid. And going back and rewatching it, I had to take a hard look at it and realize, as much as I enjoyed it personally, this movie is definitely not the quality that I thought it was.
Yeah.
Is there an ideal that Obi-Wan stands for? Something that transcends the situation and anyone can look at it and say, yeah, that's the right thing to do?
You mean like where he's put into like two things are in conflict and he has to choose one or the other?
Yeah.
I think for Obi-Wan, like, if you're looking for a character trait in the first movie, like, it's going to be loyalty. Loyalty is really, really big to Obi-Wan. And so, like, Qui-Gon is his master. And he is loyal to the Jedi Order, too. But his loyalty to Qui-Gon transcends that. And so I think when he's thrown from one situation to another is when his master dies. And he's like, oh, crap. And his master's dying wish is to train the boy and Anakin. And Obi-Wan's like, okay, I'm going to do it. And so he tells Yoda, like, he basically is like, look, I'm a part of your Jedi Order, but as a Padawan, my loyalty is to my master first and foremost. And so I'm doing this.
Right.
Like, I think that's a point where Obi-Wan's loyal, because it's interesting, because it's not like it's a question of loyalty and doing something else. It's like a loyalty and loyalty, and which person is he going to choose over the other, which entity?
Right. Like, who is he beholden to at the end of the day? Yeah. I think that's a fair argument, especially because I wasn't thinking of Obi-Wan as the main character of this movie. I could see how that it could be.
I mean, if you think about it, he beats the bad guy at the end.
That doesn't make him the good guy. I mean, Anakin beats the other guys at the end.
No, he doesn't.
See, there we go.
Anakin didn't do squat.
Is this goal that Obi-Wan's trying to achieve in this movie a noble goal? Is it something that's significant for him in his life personally?
Yeah.
You want to, like, delve into your thought process when you say that?
Oh, like in terms of him being loyal, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really big for him because
I'm sorry, not just loyalty, but also just so that loyalty, right, that he embodies in some ways how that translates into the goals of the movie at large.
I think it's interesting because there's a lot of, like, in terms of, like, the way the movie plays out, mm-hmm. Qui-Gon is basically going against the Jedi Order a lot, or there's, like, a lot of friction, and you even see that in the Jedi Council meeting, and Obi-Wan is acting as almost this, like, temperament to Qui-Gon, like, hold on, like, the council said to do this, or the council said to do that, or, like, how will the council feel about you bringing this boy with us? It's like there's a lot of questions of who are you loyal to right now. And it's also interesting because Palpatine shows the opposite of that in his interactions with Valorum, because Valorum, like, trusts Palpatine. And then mm-hmm. Palpatine stabs him in the back and is like, yeah, actually, guys, we should get rid of this guy.
Right.
We shouldn't. Yeah. Just get rid of him. And he uses Padme to do it. There's also, like, the instances of, like, the Gungans teaming up with the people of Naboo. And, like, that there's, like, a level of commitment there, even though it's kind of not great, but okay.
Oh, man, using the Gungans to support his point. He must be drawn from the straw hay.
There's not much to draw from in this movie.
there we go. All right, there we go.
I just don't like that you gave Captain Marvel a higher ranking than it.
Well, so you're like pulling out all the stops. You're like, here, we're gonna change your opinion by the end of this so that it's higher. You might do that.
I don't care if it's higher by 0.01 points as long as it's higher.
Okay. All right, there we go.
I don't know. I think like in terms of like what they're going for, I think loyalty is a big part of it. I don't honestly know what else it would be. I mean, maybe you have an idea.
No. I mean, honestly, this was the point where you did help make a somewhat interesting case for loyalty. I had nothing because I couldn't think of anything. But I also wasn't thinking of Obi-Wan as the main character. I was thinking of Qui-Gon this entire time. And so that does change a lot about how this whole thing is viewed. I think the fact that we even had to have that conversation about who the main character is draws into question a lot. And I think that's significant, not just because that for this particular movie, but in large, there are many movies at this point that have this big team up of different characters and they don't develop them a whole lot. And so it's not clear who the main character is. It makes it a lot harder, I think, for those movies to be compelling. And yeah. I would say of all of the Star Wars movies, this one is down the list. It's at the bottom of the list due to the recent releases, but it's down there in the list, partially because they do so poorly in this regard of making mm-hmm. it clear who the main character is, why they even care to be here, what they're struggling with, how they figure what they should be doing as they engage with their enemies, you know, all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah.
But I think you raised some good points. So, tension. This is probably the biggest thing, is when they can take the character and put them from a bad situation and put them in a worse situation. Did you think that they did that well in this movie?
When you go...
And this is a sliding scale. So this is like a couple points with no, and then a lot of points with yes. The scale... This is the most heavily weighted question in the whole system.
Yeah, because there's a lot in terms of like them going from one conflict to another and then having a break, and then going from one conflict to another and having a break. And like, you do have the sense of where, like, in terms of conflicts, the conflicts do get worse and the odds do look worse for the people involved. And like, you have the Gungans fighting the battle droids, you have the palace, you have Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan fighting Maul, and you have the instance where Qui-Gon dies and like, right. Or he gets stabbed, which apparently that means nothing now. Ripstick Qui-Gon.
Jedi Masters can't survive a stabbing, but not Padawans anymore can. It's awesome.
Yeah. To quote Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool, that's just lazy writing.
You know, Arendelle was watching the Ryan Reynolds Green Lantern the other day. I was like, what are we doing right now?
Have you seen it?
Yes.
It's so bad.
So bad.
And it's so funny how many roasts are within the Deadpool movies for Green Lantern.
Yeah, when he comes in and shoots himself reading the Green Lantern script.
There's that one. There's also, like, in his wallet, his ID is the Green Lantern card.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, he has it in his wallet. It's like the Green Lantern, like, Pokemon-looking card.
That's pretty funny.
He also has, like, a Green Lantern action figure and a Green Lantern ring. He also has, like, the bad version of Deadpool from the Wolverine movie, an action figure. Anyways, really that, back on, let's get back on track.
Yeah. Little side bit for you guys. So did you think, I guess, on a scale of, I don't know, like, they did really bad, they did kind of bad, they did okay, they did kind of good, and they did good. How would you put them on regards to putting them from a good situation to a bad situation to a worse situation?
I think they did, eh. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like they went from bad to good to bad to good to bad to bad to good to bad to bad to good to...
Right. Yeah, there wasn't a real consistency. You felt pretty... I would say, at least for myself, when I was watching it, I felt they... You didn't really get the impression for a lot of the situations that they were going to potentially lose anything or be at stake. The only times I thought that was, one, when Qui-Gon Jinn dies... And they're facing Darth Maul. And two, when the stakes were really high in the pod race, ironically, of all situations, where they were actually in a situation where if things went bad, they'd be in a terrible spot.
I don't know. I feel like episode one is pretty much just like a really bad background story.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It's just a really bad background story with some good characters.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But Captain Marvel's worse.
Yeah, you're not helping your case with Captain Marvel right now.
Well, I didn't do a podcast with that, so I can't go into depth for why I think that movie is bad.
Sure, that's fine. Well, if you want to stick around for the Marvels in a couple weeks, let me know. We'll see if you can trash that one.
Oh, trust me. I'm able to trash it.
You don't know. You haven't watched it yet.
I don't need... I've seen the trailer.
Well, I would make you watch it before you say anything. All right.
You know how I know it's trash? Because Brie Larson is in it.
Yeah, that's who plays Carol Danvers, right? Or whatever. You're going to hate my review of that. All right, anyways. Was there any revelations in this movie that changed everything?
Changed everything?
Yes.
I think they were going for that when Shmi Skywalker was like... Qui-Gon's like, who was the father? And she's like, he had none. And I think George Lucas, I'm not going to lie, when writing that, is like envisioning the audience going, when most of us were just like, a bullshit. Oh, wait, I can't say that.
Yeah.
Most people, when they're watching, are like, haha, that's funny. You're such a liar.
I would agree. I would think that there was a couple small revelations that were significant for the story.
But like when they go like, oh, go ahead.
No, well, just like Padme being the queen and not the handmaiden.
Or oh, that's true.
Anakin being the chosen one, or the existence of the Sith for the Jedi. Those were all supposed to be big revelations in that universe, but none of them
they
really
weren't done well.
Fundamentally changed a lot about what happened as the story progressed. Or if they did, we as the audience already knew about it. And so we weren't surprised by that revelation, or it wasn't a big revelation to us.
Well, right? We didn't know about Padme.
We didn't know. So we didn't know about Padme, but that didn't change really anything.
Yeah, it didn't. And that's why I say I think all of the reveals were done very poorly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're done in very bad taste.
I could get points on that. Was there a...
You have a scene, a deleted scene, and we find out that Watto is Anakin's father.
That would change everything. Many.
Darth Vader's like, wait, what?
This explains his anger issues. Was there any like surprising? Do you think that the ending was surprising or climactic in a way that just really knocked the socks off?
I think that answers your question.
Okay, there we go. Cool. So, does the main character grow as a person? What did you think about Obi-Wan? We talked about this. You think he did.
I think he definitely does.
Yeah, and I think that especially if you put him in light of trying to decide between who he's really struggling against. That makes sense.
This also goes into why I think one would have been better as not being a movie. One would have been better as two, and two would have been so much better because you get to see, like, you see it a little bit in two, but they don't, they kind of fumble the ball here because Obi-Wan's whole character is like, he was thrown into this role as a Jedi Master and he didn't know what he was doing, really. He'd barely finished being a Padawan. He'd watched his master be killed in front of him. And he has the responsibility of training the single most powerful being in the entire galaxy. Not to mention Anakin is already, like, way past due to sign up to be a youngling. Right. Like, he missed the sign-in sheet by, like, 8 years.
Nice.
They kind of fumbled the ball there, and I think it would have been so interesting to see Obi-Wan's character go from being this unsure, very, like, he's, like, not confident at all to, like, getting to a point where he's like, okay, I think I can do this at the end of, like, the second movie.
Right.
You don't get that. You get, like, this Obi-Wan who's like, oh, yeah, Anakin, you're my apprentice, but you're, like, also my little buddy over here. And
come on, bud.
Yeah, and they, like, have, like, this weird, like, dad-son-slash-friend relationship. And it's kind of like, are you his superior? Well, I guess you are, but you don't act like it.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you don't see any of that, like, this, like, weight of the responsibility that you should see in a character within Obi-Wan in Episode 2. There's, like, no weight of that. Now, that's for, like, another podcast, but I think the point I'm making is, like, Obi-Wan's character, while he develops, all of the development, even though it's there, could have probably have been accomplished in, like, a 10 minute like scene, maybe 20 minutes. Maybe like a 10-20 minute like scene at the beginning of Episode 1, where it's like you start out with Obi-Wan as he watches his master die at the very beginning of the movie, and then he has to train this new apprentice, and so like the rest of the movie is like, oh crap, I have no idea what I'm doing.
Right.
That's a mass oversimplification, but I think that's my point.
Well, even just some of the other conflicts, too, if they really thought they were important, layering those into the discussions that Obi-Wan is having when he's at the council, as he's trying to, let's just say, join the council or train Anakin, and they're calling into question the rebelliousness of Qui-Gon or where Anakin's origins truly are and things like that. Really important pieces of this movie that play into the rest of the universe could have been done very simply in the next movie and just cut out Episode 1.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's a tough call, but I think that you make the right one. Is there a theme of this movie? There you go.
Star Wars.
Star Wars, yeah. I didn't think of one either. Which, it's tough because it's bled into these other ones that have these great themes and ideas around them in 4, 5, and 6, and so to be started off so poorly on this one, it's kind of tough to not even have something you can pull out of it. If someone can, go ahead and message us, lostplot.com. You can find us, reach us there, and then we'll have a discussion on it. But no, I didn't really see one. So,
I mean, other than like the loyalty, but
right, and that's like his character trait. But then, what does that leave you with at the end of the day that you can walk away from the movie and think about how significant that is, right? So, you know, loyalty survives in the worst of circumstances or something like that, right? Some sort of,
I think, like,
an inalienable truth. But I don't even think you can walk away with that message from this with loyalty.
I think, like, if you're going to go for a theme, it's probably going to be, like, loyalty, friendship, something to that extent.
Nice.
Maybe, like, overcoming fear, because they talk about it with Anakin a little bit, but it's not nearly developed enough to be labeled a theme.
And so that's why I wouldn't give it one. But
well, I'd give it loyalty. Loyalty and friendship, I think.
This guy is such a...
I told you I gave it one. You're not... You're, like,
you're just fighting so hard, dude. Okay.
do you deny the fact that it would... That is a theme of the movie?
So there's a value, there's like a value embodied in a character, and then there's a theme, which are different things. So a value embodied in a character is something like, for example, for Lord of the Rings, Frodo's idea is like perseverance, right? Persevering. And he is trying to embody that as he carries the ring to its mission, to its goal at the end of Mount Doom. And then the overall theme would be the perseverance in the worst of circumstances, or something more along the lines of like what's the opposite? What is the ring manifests itself as? Why am I blanking on this right now? Because I think about this all the time when I'm going to bed, right? Instead of Rome, I think of this. The ring is like this idea of like an addiction, right? And so the idea that corruption or corruption, which is like the opposite of this, the perseverance against corruption, corruption ends up destroying itself, right? And that's kind of the message of the movie. So generally you have these different elements that encompass these ideas, and then it plays into when they connect with each other and interact with each other, it plays into a broader message of what does this mean? And so that's where you say, like, loyalty is the highest value in Obi-Wan, and then loyalty wins out in against the darkest of evils or some sort of other message. But it's not even that loyalty was really combated by the Sith in this story, so I don't think you can make that claim.
Here's what I'm thinking when I'm saying this, by the way.
Sure.
In the movie, there's a line where, and this is interesting to me. I don't know if Lucas intended this, but there's a line where Obi-Wan tells Qui-Gon, like, don't defy the council, like, not again. He basically says, like, don't do this again. And Qui-Gon says, I will do what I must, Obi-Wan. And it's interesting because it's like there's this message that there are things that transcend loyalty to certain entities. And what's interesting to me is that Obi-Wan says the exact same line to Anakin when Anakin is telling him that he should be loyal to him. And so, like, I pulled up the script because I want to make sure I'm saying this right.
Okay.
He says, Anakin says to him,
if you're fighting not... so hard to beat the other movie. Keep going.
Okay, this isn't just because I'm trying to beat the movie. I thought of this before.
Okay, you go.
He says, Anakin says, if you're not with me, then you're my enemy. He's basically saying, if you're not loyal to me, then I want nothing to do with you. Mm-hmm. In the same way, Qui-Gon in episode 1 is saying, like, look. Because Obi-Wan's like, look, you're supposed to be loyal to this one entity. And in that instance, it's the Jedi Council.
Right.
And Qui-Gon's basically saying, I will do what I must. Saying, like, almost, I'm going to do what my conscience tells me to. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, at the end of the day, even though I may be loyal to this entity, I have to do what I believe is right at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And so in the same way, you see it's different entities you're dealing with. Anakin basically says to Obi-Wan, you're supposed to be loyal to me. You're mm-hmm. my friend. Like, if you're not, then you're just my enemy now. Right. And then Obi-Wan says in response, I will do what I must, which is exactly what Qui-Gon told him when Obi-Wan was telling him you're supposed to be loyal to this other entity. And so it's like this idea, and I think it's interesting that Obi-Wan says it because he's Qui-Gon's apprentice.
That is
so it's
interesting,
like,
right.
It's like Obi-Wan is taking this lesson that his master taught him in episode 1, that yes, you are, like, loyalty is super important, but there are still certain things that transcend loyalty. And so while, yes, loyalty is good, when it's in conflict with these other things, you have to be willing to, like, put that aside and do what's right despite that.
No, that's interesting. That is very interesting. I haven't thought about that comparison before, but I think that's a very interesting point.
I don't know. It's again, I will grant you, it is hard to label a one specific, like, theme throughout the movie, but I think if I had to pick a theme, it'd be that, like, loyalty is important, and yet there's some things that transcend loyalty, mm-hmm. which I think is an interesting message.
I do think it's an interesting message. I think my biggest maybe issue with it isn't that it's a good message or not, or that it's even played out to a certain degree in the story. It's that it's with a subplot that you really only get like 15, 20 minutes for, and that's with the Jedi Council in the middle of the movie, and then very like 30 seconds at the very end. So it's not a huge section of the overall movie. It's a section for Obi-Wan and his development, but in regards to being an actual message of the movie, I still feel like it's a little bit of a grasp. Yeah. I just think, especially because I spent so much time in Naboo with the Sith, with the Trade Federation, and that's not an aspect of that in any way for those parts of the movie. It's not a core enough element of the story for me to give it points on that.
Well, this is why, like, I think this goes to it not being that great of a movie, is they don't really have subplots. They just have plots.
Okay, interesting. I've never heard anyone make this argument before, but go ahead.
There's no, like, overarching plot. Think about it. You have the beginning of the movie, which the arc is, oh, we're going to go have diplomatic mission in Naboo. And it ultimately it fails, and then you end up on Tatooine. And then the mission is no longer just getting back to Coruscant. It's like, I guess if you're going to make the case that there's an overarching goal, it's freedom for Naboo. Mm-hmm. And so I guess maybe that's a theme, fighting for freedom. But is it? I don't know. And so like you just have all of these plots throughout, and I think that plays into the fact that you have multiple protagonists.
Right, and that ultimately is the bigger thing about this movie.
Which is why I think it's easiest to just pick one, and I mean I pick Obi-Wan because I think he's the most definitive in his arc and the themes that go along with his arc and like the way he interacts with the story. And even though he isn't this like big flashy protagonist who goes through like these major changes throughout the movie, I think he has the clearest arc out of all of them and the clearest like conflict within himself that he resolves. Yeah. And the clearest themes in his story.
That's a good place to put it. Overall, what did you think of the movie? Did it leave you with a desire to watch the next one? Did it leave you satisfied? Did it leave you unsatisfied? What did you think?
I'm be honest, if I had no idea what the heck Star Wars was and I watched the first movie, I'd probably be like, meh, okay.
So what does that mean? Does that mean you'd be unsatisfied or would you be satisfied? Like, oh, that's fine.
The thing is with the movie, there's no reason to watch another one if it's just that movie.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, I think the reason one did so well is because you have 4, 5, and 6 and people 100%. Are like, oh my gosh, 100%. It's Star Wars. And it's almost like the reason episode 7 did well, because you have 1 through 6. Mm-hmm. And so, like, if George Lucas had started with 1, I think I can definitively say Star Wars would not have done as well as it did. While a lot of why 1 did so well is because it had Star Wars, it had the name Star Wars on it.
Right. It's a brand at that point.
Yeah. And so, I mean, going into it, having seen 4, 5, and 6, yeah, sure, it's cool. Of course I want to see the next one because it's more Star Wars, but not because of 1.
That sounds about right for me. I was a little unsatisfied overall, especially with Anakin being at the end going in and saving the day. That was the biggest load of crap I've seen in a movie in a good long while. I don't care if he has the Force directing him and R2-D2. That was some BS. But
as Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool says, lazy story writing.
Lazy story writing. Yep. So, overall, do you think that just after this discussion, do you think that would have changed your overall rating?
What did I give it? A 5.56?
Yeah.
If I'm going to use your evaluation chart.
You haven't given me a good reason not to yet. If you have a reason why we should do something else, I'm open to it, but...
Well, because, like... The way that I've been ranking them before is, like, if we're ranking them out of 10, a 7, I'd watch it again. A 6.5 sure. is, like, I would not watch it again of my own volition. Which is why I give it a 6.5.
You have to rate it a little bit differently based on that. But you could probably still have a similar system of, let's just say, 5.5 being that cutoff point for you now. And then everything above that is... something you'd be willing to watch again if someone else put it on or you know, whatever that is.
6.5 is
this
like...
This is just supposed to have some sort of metrics that you're actually gauging based off of, so you can make that evaluation of what's actually important in this movie.
This is like one... This is like a... See, here's the thing, and here's the problem with one, ultimately. Mm-hmm. It's like a debate round where the debaters give you no framework and then say, okay, now give me a decision. And you're like...
You have nothing to go off of.
Yeah. You're like, F wins. Why? Don't ask me. You got to leave me out of this.
Yeah, they did go.
Which is why I think with one, it's just easier to rank it off of would I watch this again? And it's not like, would I watch it again purely because I enjoy it? Mm-hmm. Or like, it's like, do I think it's a good enough? No, because here's the thing. Every time, and I'm going to be completely honest right now, every time I introduce someone to Star Wars and they're like, oh, should we start with 1, 2, 3, or 4, 5, 6? I'm like, yeah, we're starting with 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
Because if I start with 1, you're going to sit there and go, why did you want me to watch these with you?
Yeah.
This is this load of garbage? What?
Yeah.
But if you start with 4, 5, 6, you're like, oh, yeah, we can watch 1. And then by the time you get to 1, they're like, oh, that one wasn't so good, but I can still watch the next one.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd probably give it, like, if you're going to go out of 9, based on everything we talked, if I'm saying Obi-Wan is the main character, mm-hmm. like, with that in mind, probably get it a 4.5, 5 out of 9.
Well, I will say, you helped me pull mine up a bit, so thanks to your little shenanigans, it'd be a 4 for me instead of a 3.5.
Yes!
So, there you go. right above, you know, just skimmed the barrel there, but you did it. So there you go. That's it. That's the pod. That's Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace. We hope you guys all enjoyed. We will be back next week. Hope to see you all then.